Good morning, everyone. I'm going to go ahead and call the Senate Judiciary Committee to order. Today, we are having a presentation from LCDC Director Richard Whitman. Will be putting us through the explanatory statements for what these bills will do. It's the intent of the chair that what we will be doing is moving Senate Bill 945 as the primary bill. The other five that are listed underneath that, those concepts are being put into 945, so we will have only one bill that will be moving forward. And so at this point, Legislative Council was unable to properly draft the amendments that were supposed to be for 945. And so what we have here today is Mr. Whitman will be reviewing the conceptual amendments for 945 and showing how the other bills will be folded into it. He will also be going over additional components to 945. And I'll put on the record, this is the results of meetings that the department and Oregonians in Action and Thousand Friends, the two primary land use organizations in the state, have been working on since the beginning of session. And so with that, Mr. Whitman and Mr. Day, understand, Ross, you're here to be part of this process since Dave had family obligations that had taken him out of the state. And Bob, why don't you come up as well? Mr. Whitman, or Richard.
Good morning, Chair Przanski, members of the committee. For the record, Richard Whitman, the Director of the Department of Land Conservation and Development, here today to testify to you about conceptual amendments to Senate Bill, Senate 45. As your chair explained, this is a work in progress. We're still working with Legislative Council to get the correct
drafting of the amendments reflecting the discussions that occurred
between the department and between Oregonians in Action and Thousand Friends of Oregon. So today what I'm going to do is walk you through the conceptual amendments to Senate Bill 945. The first five amendments, or the first four amendments, if you will, to Senate Bill 945, and there's a one-page handout that I've distributed to members of the committee that describes these conceptual amendments. So I'm just going to walk you through that paper. The first, Senate Bill 945 itself is simply a correction of an erroneous cross-reference that exists in Measure 49 right now. It's an erroneous cross-reference to a section in Measure 49. So that's all that Senate Bill 945 by itself does. So concept number two is to amend Senate Bill 946 into Senate Bill 945. Senate Bill 946 would allow Measure 37 claimants who filed claims for property within a city but outside of an urban growth boundary to pursue relief under Measure 49. Right now, under Measure 49, claimants who fall into that, whose property falls into that category, are not allowed to obtain relief under Measure 49. That would affect approximately 20 claimants. And it's primarily claimants whose property is zoned for rural residential use, and most of them are in Clackamas County.
Mr. Chair, it's this Damascus.
Chair Przanski, Senator Whitsitt, many of these are within the city of Damascus outside of the urban growth boundary. That is correct. Not all, but many of them. Senate Bill 947 would be the second amendment into 945, and this particular provision, the intent here is to allow claimants who filed for property within a city but outside of an urban growth boundary. And I have to pause here and apologize to Senator Whitsitt. It's actually this category in Senate Bill 947 that is primarily the claimants who have property within the city of Damascus but outside of the urban growth boundary. So it's actually 947. That's approximately five claimants who fall into that category. The third amendment, number four on your sheet, is Senate Bill 948. This one's a little bit more complicated. This concerns both provisions of Measure 37 and Measure 49. Under Measure 37, there was a requirement for claimants to file within 2 years of the effective date of ballot Measure 37. If they did that, there were no prerequisites to filing. If they waited longer than 2 years, there was a prerequisite to filing, and that prerequisite was that they file a land use application for a use of their property and have that application be denied by a city or a county. So we have a number of claimants who filed a claim with a county before that date, but who did not file with the state before that date. And so they were, if you will, caught in a situation where they then, after filing with the county, needed to, nevertheless, in order to file with the state, needed to go back and file a land use application, obtain a denial, and then file with the state. This provision would allow the people in that category to move forward and obtain relief under Measure 49. That affects about 150 claimants, a relatively high number. The Fourth Amendment, number five on your list, is Senate Bill 949, and this concerns claimants who did file an election under Measure 49. However, they filed that. Measure 49 required that the elections be filed within 90 days of the time that the date that they received the forms from the Department of Land Conservation and Development. We have a number of claimants who filed their elections late. We believe that there was a certain amount of confusion among claimants. A fairly high number of claims came in within 3 months, and then there was somewhat of a drop-off. So many people, we believe, looked at that 90 days, assumed 90 days was 3 months, and miscalculated the number of days. So this would, there may have also been some confusion about how the days were counted in terms of date of receipt versus date of mailing. So the intent here is to allow claimants who were within 7 days of the deadline to go ahead and proceed under Measure 49. We've gone back and looked at those, and that would affect approximately 70 claimants. The next conceptual amendment is not contained in one of the Senate bills that's out there yet. This is number and I have to note, this was late last night, and there are two number fives on your paper, so
second number five.
It's the second number five. Thank you, Chair Przanski. So this would add a new section to Senate Bill 945, allowing claimants who, let me back up for a second, under Measure 49.
Claimants have three pathways that they could pursue. They could
elect under what's called Section 6 for 1 to 3 home sites, in which case they did not have to prove that they lost value as a result of a land use regulation. Or they could proceed under Section 7 of Measure 49, in which case they did have to make that proof, and then they were allowed 4 to 10 home sites. Or the third pathway was if they had a vested right in common law under Measure 37, which means they had proceeded far enough along in terms of development of their property that under the court cases in our state, they would be allowed to complete and continue that use of their property. That was their third pathway. A number of claimants have desired to not pursue, not obtain both a vested right and relief under Measure 49, but have the option of finding out first if they in fact have a vested right to under 37, and then if they're not successful on that, come back under Measure 49 and obtain relief under Section 6 of 49 for 1-3 home sites. So the intent here is to allow claimants to do that, and that's conceptually what this provision would do. It would require claimants to make that choice of whether to proceed under a vested right pathway or a Section 6 1-3 home sites by the end of this calendar year. Okay. Turning to the backside of your page number 6, the next conceptual amendment would add a new section to Senate Bill 945, providing that if a claimant's property was bisected by the urban growth boundary, they can elect to seek relief under Section 6 of Measure 49 for 1-3 home sites. The home sites would have to be put on the portion of their property outside of the urban growth boundary. This would affect approximately 10 claimants. And so with that, we've gone through the categories of claimants that we would, so to speak, put back in line under Measure 49 for relief under Measure 49. The following sections that I'm going to describe are process changes in Measure 49 to deal with some of the process issues that we've seen in terms of implementing the Act. So first one is number 7. We would, the legislature would provide that the department will complete processing of Measure 49 claims by the end of June of 2010. That's for essentially the existing universe of claims that we have before us now, which is over 4,000. The approximately 400 additional claims that I just described in those categories would also have a deadline, but they would have a deadline 6 months later of the end of the calendar year 2010. Number 8. Number 8 deals with something we've seen under Measure 49. 49 has a pretty strict requirement in it requiring the department to process Measure 49 claims in the order that the elections were received by the department. And we have a number of hardship cases out there. We know many of the Measure 49 claimants, because they're a group who acquired their property some time ago, are elderly. So we have claimants who are facing serious medical expenses because of their age. Also because of the economy, we have some claimants who are facing financial difficulty. Right now, we can't do anything for those folks in terms of moving them up in the process. This provision would give the department very limited authority to, in cases of severe hardship, move a limited number of claimants to the front of the line, recognizing their hardship to address that situation. It is limited to no more than 10 per month, and again, we have over 4,000 claims that we're going to complete within the next 14 months or so, so we're not talking about moving that many up. It's, you know, on the order of approximately 100 folks that this would help. Number 9 addresses another process issue. I mentioned a minute ago the third pathway that is available under Measure 49 for a claimant to pursue their rights under Measure 37 if they have a vested right to do that. Right now, there is no express, at any rate, limitation period on when claimants need to get a determination of whether or not they have a vested right or not under 37. So this would put a limitations period in of 2 years from the effective date of this legislation. Number 10 addresses two other categories of claimants for which there is we have not come to a decision what to do about yet. The first are claimants who filed a claim with a county but not the state, and under Measure 37, claimants with property in rural areas were required to file both with it, the county and with the state of Oregon. So we have approximately 960 claimants who filed only with a county and not with the state. There are four counties in particular where there's a high number of claimants who filed only with a county. This section would direct the department working with the counties to investigate why that's the case, why those claimants only filed with a county, to report back to the legislature before the end of this calendar year so that this legislature can then decide what to do with those claimants. There is one other category that we would also be directed to investigate. Under Section 7, again, claimants could obtain up to 10 home sites if they prove a loss of value. There was a deadline for claimants to submit their proof of loss of value. We have approximately, I apologize, I don't have this.
140.
Thank you, Mr. Stacey. About 140 claimants who elected to pursue relief under that part of Measure 49, but did not file their proof in the form of appraisal within the required timeline. What that means right now under Measure 49 is that they are not entitled to any relief under 49. Again, this section would direct the department to investigate basically what happened with those claimants, report back to the legislature for a decision to be made about what to do with those claimants. And then finally, number 11 at the bottom of the page would add an emergency clause so that this would go into effect immediately upon passage, upon signature, and so that we essentially so that we could deal with these claimants right away. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
All right. Thank you, Richard. First of all, I want to thank you for putting together this conceptual amendment page, and I want to just put on the record again, due to, let's say, inadequate drafting by legislative council, the amendments that we expected were not done correctly. And so Richard, on his time last night, put this together in haste. And based on what has been shared with me by the two land use groups that I previously mentioned, Oregonians in Action and Thousand Friends, it does appear to reflect what I was told and such. Now, I do want to make a couple of comments regarding a couple of these sections. Going back to page one, the first number five, there were some discussions as to making this applicable for those within a three-day period of time. When originally discussed, after hearing this and reviewing it, I chose to ask them to consider moving it to a seven-day period. That would allow for those individuals who may have got everything done on the last day that you could file to get it in the mail, and for whatever reason, it just didn't get to department in time. So the seven-day spread is there to make certain that everyone that filed timely, or let's say before the actual time deadline are included. Chair understands there may be a few that are going to also get a benefit because they filed afterwards, but we thought this was more equitable of a way to go. And regarding the hardship, this is another one that I know I've received a number of calls from individuals trying to move forward because of the strictness of how the language was written. In the previous legislation, the department has been obligated to basically do first come, first in, first out, with a few exceptions on let's say express versus the conditional to some level, but there was no discretion. This will give them that opportunity, and I want to note that the discretion will fall on the shoulders of Mr. Whitman as the director in making these decisions based on consultations from people within the department. But what we wanted to do and what I took from the two organizations is they wanted some type of relief valve that would be available, but everyone understood that there had to be some guidelines as well as discretion to make certain that we can make this process go forward. Lastly, what I want to note is regarding the time deadlines that we have set up for completion of the work. The completion of the work of those that have been filed and are in the process of being reviewed by the department will have a date certain of June 30th, 2010. And then and I expect that these amendments will be going forward. My calculation is approximately, there's approximately 400 new claimants that would be brought in under this. And because that's another, let's say, a significant number of individuals that will need to be processed, or those claims need to be processed, there will be an additional 6 months to allow them to be completed by the agency. The part that I wanted to note is in the calls that I've received, my frustration, as well as many of the individuals that have called, we as the legislature chose to fund the department at a certain level. It was not what the department had requested to be able to complete these on a more timely basis, but because of what was decided through the department funding process during the 07 session, that is why we're at with the numbers that we have. Now, I do understand, and Mr. Whitman, Richard, if you'll let us know if I'm incorrect on this, the process that has been used and the time frame as the ones that are being processed now is on schedule, lack of better terms, in the sense of that you're processing approximately how many you expected per month, but because you didn't have additional resources, it is limited to getting the larger group through this process sooner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that opportunity to make that point. So the June 30th, 2010 deadline for the department is, we believe, not only feasible, but we have a high level of confidence that we can make that deadline if we receive resources at the level that's requested in the governor's recommended budget for implementation of Measure 49. So we are, more broadly, we are on track in terms of processing of claims based on what we projected to the legislature back during the preparation and deliberations on House Bill 3540, which became Measure 49. And during the supplemental session in early 08, where, as you noted, we did not receive the level of funding that we requested, but we are on track for what we projected based on that lower level of funding.
Yeah, and just for the record, it's my intent as a chair to do everything I can to insist upon the co-chairs to make certain the funding that is requested through the governor's budget stays intact, even though no economic hard times are here. This is a situation that has been ongoing for a significant period of time, and I believe we have an obligation to move these through as quick as we can, and the time frame that's currently set forth would, in fact, with that level of funding, accomplish that. So, colleagues, questions? Okay, we'll start with Senator Wissett.
Thank you, Chair Brzezinski. Just to be clear, I believe I heard you say at the Land Use Forum last weekend that with the with your current assets, you would be able to meet these guidelines without any more money. That as long as you aren't cut back, that you would be able to meet these guidelines with what you have. Is that correct?
Chair Brzezinski, Senator Whitsitt, that is correct. And so Governor's recommended budget is essentially continuing the level of resources that we have now
for implementation. Okay. And then another question, if I might, on I believe it's the originally number 9. This essentially establishes a new limit, a new statute of limitations, for lack of a better word, that this has to be these claims must be made within that framework, or they go away. Is that correct?
Chair Brzezinski, Senator Whitsitt, that's correct. The claims, and this is how it is played out under 49, can either be made in the form of the filing of a court case, normally a declaratory judgment action, or a number of counties have, by ordinance, set up procedures, quasi-judicial, non-judicial procedures at the county level for those determinations. This would allow either of those mechanisms, and often the non-judicial mechanism may be less expensive for a property owner to get a resolution of this.
Okay, so it does establish a new limit that didn't previously exist.
Chair Brzezinski, Senator Whitsitt, it creates an express limitations period. Frankly, I have not looked whether there's an existing limitations period, general limitations period under Oregon law that might apply to these actions.
That would be good to know, I believe. And then the third question, if I may.
Yes.
Has to do with the currently number 10, which does not include those who have made a claim with the county but not with the state in this bill. It's my understanding that almost two-thirds of those who have been left out of this process by these various different glitches, if you want to call them that, are in that group. And I would wonder if you could share with us your reasoning in whole, and also by the counties, why you wouldn't want to include these also in that relief.
Chair Brzezinski, Senator Whitsitt, I can speak in generalities about the initial investigation we've done on this. So we do have a list of the approximate number of claimants in each county that fall into this category. Part of the difficulty here is these are individuals who filed a claim with a county but not the state. So we don't have their information. We're working off of reporting from the counties, and all what we have is a general report, I believe, from the Association of Oregon Counties effort during 37. So we have not gone back county by county and verified those numbers yet. But those initial numbers show that there are four counties, as I mentioned, where a large proportion of this group of 960 are. And those are Washington County, Jackson County, Columbia County, and Josephine County. We frankly, we're not sure why there's a large number in Washington County, and that's part of the response to you in terms of why we think it's a good idea to investigate this. We know Washington County was advising Measure 37 claimants that they needed to file with the state as well. It may be that there's a high number of county-only claims in Washington County because there's a high amount of land in Washington County that is inside of urban growth boundaries, but not inside of a city. And that could have led claimants filing claims for properties in that category of lands only with the county and not with the state. But we don't know. In Jackson County, this was an issue, frankly, between Jackson County and the state. We have two court cases where we litigated this issue with Jackson County, and two court determinations that held, in fact, yes, you do have to file both with the state and the county. However, those court cases were not resolved until relatively late in the 37 process, and I believe after the two-year deadline under Measure 37 for within which you could file a claim without first having to get a denial of a land use application. That, I believe, put a number of claimants in the situation of having been told by the county, we will give you a permit even if you only have a waiver from the county, and then the county losing those court cases, that, you know, we believe that's part of the explanation in Jackson County. In Columbia County and in Josephine County, we have anecdotal information that some claimants may have been told by the counties that they did not need to file with the state, but we have not verified that yet. And again, that would be part of the purpose of investigation. So the conditions differ from county to county, and that's part of the reason for trying to sort this out a little bit more before we make a decision, I believe, about how to handle this.
Couple other follow-ups, please. It wouldn't appear to me that it should be that difficult to contact the county commissions and find out what happened there in each of those counties. Certainly, I'm aware that the Jackson County people were advising their folks that they didn't need to file with the state. And, of course, when you're advised by a government entity that you're not required to, and then you lose your claim because you now are required to, there seems to be an inequity there, quite an inequity. On the Jackson County issue, there is a current court case going on through by Citizens for Constitutional Fairness against Jackson County, where Judge Panner actually ruled that the a vested interest, and it's my understanding, I'm not a lawyer, but he ruled that the a vested interest is a quasi-judicial contract. It is a contract that cannot constitutionally be altered. Does that ongoing lawsuit have any bearing on why you would not include Jackson County in this?
Chair Brzezinski, Senator Whitsitt, certainly in the discussions among the groups here, it has not come up as a basis for including or excluding Jackson County. It's difficult for me to predict. As you know, I believe that case is on appeal in the Federal Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. The state was not a party to Judge Panner's decision and is not bound by Judge Panner's decision. Judge Panner's decision only concerns Jackson County. So exactly what that means in terms of how this plays out, there's a high degree of uncertainty right now. There are other cases involving this question of whether waivers issued under Measure 37, either by the state or by a county, constitute a contract that's protected by the federal constitution. We have state court decisions going in the other direction. We have other federal court cases raising this issue, so it's way too early for me to predict how this might sort out. For me personally, has played no role in whether or not how we handle these county-only claimant situations.
One more, please. And will the Court of Appeals in this appeal, will the Court of Appeals decide whether the state is bound by Judge Panner's decision?
Chair Brzezinski, Senator Whitsitt, I don't believe that will be before the Ninth Circuit, given the current posture of the case. But again, it's a little bit difficult to predict exactly where that might go right now.
Yeah. Senator Whitsitt, based on what I've heard today as well as what I've heard previously, if the state's not a party to it, it would be interesting how the Ninth Circuit would somehow bring that into the arguments and discussion, but only time will tell.
Chairperson, it seemed to me that, Chair, that if it was if it was a violation of a contract in Josephine County or in Jackson County, then it certainly would be a violation of a contract in Josephine, Columbia, and Washington counties as well. whether the state was a part of the suit or not. I mean, if they find that it breaches the Constitution, then it breaches the Constitution for the entire state.
Well, no, it doesn't. What it would do is it would potentially say that those counties may be liable for whatever they did, not necessarily what the state did or didn't do, because based on what I understand at this point, that's not the issues that are before the court. So the court could come back and say that Jackson County has to, is, let's say, responsible and has an obligation to some type of relief.
I didn't in reading the lawsuit, I didn't see where the judge ruled that the county violated the contract. It was the state. It was the Measure 49 law that violated the contract, not the county.
Well, I'm not going to debate it with you just because I don't have the case and I have not reviewed it. I'm just relying on what I'm hearing today based on that information as to what I would, my perspective. But guess what? The court will make their decision.
Certainly
and we'll get to see what happens after that.
That we can be certain of.
Right. Senator Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for all your work on this. And I know when you get to something like this, it's been so negotiated. There's a reason for everything. But I wanted to ask about paragraph 8, which if we renumber, I guess would be paragraph 9, about the hardship process. And what I'm wondering is that 10 claims per month seems very artificial. And I wonder if you talked about what happens if 8 people apply for the hardship consideration 1 month and then 12 people apply the next month. Do they carry over? Is it like use or lose? And what happens in that situation? And I wonder if you just, because you seem to have some pretty specific criteria when somebody can be offered that hardship consideration and move up in line, whether you considered just having whomever meets the criteria gets moved up in line rather than having the 10 per month. I wonder if that would make a significant difference.
Chair Brzezinski, Senator Bonamici, we did have a basis for setting this number. We have a record over the last year of let me back up. One of the provisions under Measure 49 was the creation of a compensation claims ombudsman. And so that person has been interacting with claimants, and it's been more than one person, but that office has been interacting with claimants over the course of the last year. So we have a record of problems, hardship cases, and we use that as the basis for setting this number of 10 per month. The reason we set a limit rather than just going with criteria is the concern that if we did not have some form of limit in there, we would have, I'm not going to say all 4,000 claimants come in, but we would have a large number of claimants basically simply try to change their position in line. This is a pretty difficult process administratively already, and we did not want to create chaos. Part of trying to get this to closure and get this done by June 30th is needing to sort of stick with the system and the process that has been put in place. So that's why there's a limit. In answer to your question about whether it carries over, no, I don't think it would. It would only allow us to move up to 10 per month. And if there are more deserving cases than that come in a particular month, then yes, we would move them to the next month. And if there are enough openings, we would move them forward at that point. So conceptually, that's what we have. The concern on the department's part is if we put that limit much higher, we start to really interfere with the process. I haven't talked through what the process is under 49, but there are a number of determinations that have to be made that are sequential, dealing with who is the owner, what is the date of acquisition, land use analysis, historical land use analysis of what that individual was allowed to do when they acquired the property. So if we start moving people around in that process, it really starts to disrupt the whole flow of work.
Thank you. And just a brief follow-up. Is there some sort of application process, or is this just done based on somebody coming in and saying, I meet one of these situations, will you please consider me for a hardship?
This would be done, and this is something that we're still looking at the drafting on from Legislative Council, but the concept is that there would be some notice put up generally on the department's website that this process is available, and a process for people to essentially make some sort of showing to the Measure 49 ombudsman, who would initially screen these and make recommendations to the director.
Thank you.
All right, any other questions?
Just a quick one, Mr. Chair. Yes. Thank you. Richard, regarding the total number of claimants that would move forward under these amendments, what percentage of the total Measure 49 claims is? I was just trying to do the math based on the presentations I've seen on Measure 49, and I was trying to figure out, part of it is that through the expedited process we were just talking about by moving people up, that I don't know if there's a finite number, you're just going to continue to move those hardship cases up. But can you give us a sense of what percentage of all the Measure 49 claims, when you total these up, will be?
Yes. So, Chair Brzezinski, Senator Dingfelder, I think there are two questions there. One, so let me start with how many claims do we have right now? We have approximately, I believe the number is around 4,400 at this point. So letting the categories of claimants back into the process, that's approximately 400 people, so slightly less than 10% increase in the number of claimants under electing under Measure 49 for relief under 49, other than a vested right. In terms of this hardship process of letting people move up in line, if we were to allow up to the maximum number of 10 per month, we're talking, we have a deadline of completing this process by June of 2010, so that's only about 14 months from now. So we're talking about a total of maybe at most 100 claimants that we would move up in line. It's not a big number.
Thank you.
All right. Let's see. Bob, I think I'll have you go next, since Ross is here on behalf of Dave.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Bob Stacey, Executive Director of 1000 Friends of Oregon. I appreciate you calling on me first, even though Mr. Day followed the rules and submitted a written form of his testimony. I'll be very brief. First, 1000 Friends of Oregon approached the session very concerned about the rate of action on review of Measure 49 claims by the department, concerned that what had been described during the campaign, where we strongly supported passage of Measure 49, what was described as an express lane, was beginning to look as if it wasn't express at all. We thought we would, at a minimum, need to appear before the Ways and Means Committee to try to maintain or even increase the resources available to the department. We learned from Mr. Whitman and his staff of their efforts to learn from what they'd already accomplished, to focus the efforts that they're doing. They gave us assurances that the performance would be improved. And along the way, we learned from the department and from Mr. Honeycutt of some significant concerns with what Senator Woods appropriately calls glitches in Measure 49 and its implementation. Glitches that caught people who in good faith were trying to avail themselves of the opportunities provided by Measure 49, which after all the voters saw as a means of assuring fairness in a way that we and the voters thought was more appropriate than Measure 37, but a way of ensuring fairness to property owners who had seen changes to the land use regulations enacted after they acquired their property. Those glitches were capturing people who could not have done anything other than what they did because of time frames or unexpected or unanticipated or unintended little traps that were established, such as land inside a city but outside an urban growth boundary, which simply weren't foreseeable by the drafters of the legislation. Those and the categories of people who made innocent mistakes, such as sending something in a few days late, but were otherwise pursuing the remedies made available to them, we concluded deserved to be reviewed and enacted upon. I have to salute not only Mr. Honeycutt, the executive director of the organization, Oregonians in Action, and Mr. Whitman for the work that they did on these proposals, but your chair, who with Solomon-like judgment took the various categories, and as we debated them, when he saw the temperature rising between Dave and me and our arguments descending more into speculation than fact, suggested that some of these could be deferred to a later date when more information is available. That seemed to be a sound way of dealing with the fact that both of us had a lot of vigor behind our arguments, but none of us, we agreed, had all the facts about why these lists are what they are in several counties. That said, 1,000 Friends of Oregon respectfully and gratefully urges you to give favorable consideration to this package assembled by the chair.
Thank you. Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For your record, Ross Day, former director of Legal Affairs, Oregonians in Action, and now with Common Sense for Oregon. I'm just trying to figure out, what is Measure 49 and Measure 37? Can somebody update me on this? Just kidding. This has been something that I personally have dedicated the last year and a half of my life to, helping Measure 49 claimants get through the process. And I'm very encouraged by the proposed amendments here, because a lot of these are problems that I personally have been trying to help people get through. And so at least conceptually, I can represent to you that Oregonians in Action certainly would support these. A couple of things I just wanted to mention. The first is, when Measure 49 passed, obviously, as an author of 37, it was a difficult pill to swallow for us for a variety of reasons, and for our board. But our board made a voice of charge to us. And there's a reason why we haven't filed any constitutional challenges to Measure 49 or anything of that nature. And that was, we were to do everything we could to make 49 work, period. And to help folks, because we've had enough fighting. It's time to get these people the relief that they're entitled to. And I give a lot of credit to 1,000 Friends of Oregon, because not soon after Measure 49 passed, we got a call from both Mr. Stacy and Mr. Eisenbeiss saying, okay, how do we get in the special session Measure 49 working? And I think that says a lot about the supporters of Measure 49 as well. A couple of quick points about just technical details. We're talking about people who filed with the county and who didn't file with the state. I can tell you, I had a client who only filed with Tillamook County because the only reason why he couldn't do what he wanted to do was because of a Tillamook County regulation. Now, that was a commercial claim, but just to give you an idea, although rare, those cases are out there too. So that's why I think it's wise to say, wait a minute, let's see what's really going on here before we decide to act on those claims where people filed with the county and not with the state. And the last, with regard to the vested rights, this is an area that I've been particularly involved in with a couple of my clients. And there's a question, a legal question, so what is a vested right? Is it an equitable remedy or is it a constitutional right? And the courts have never defined vested rights one way or the other. I think it's an equitable remedy. But again, like I said, the courts have never really ruled on it one way or the other. And so when I, the two-year statute of limitations, if it's an equitable remedy, then I think the two-year statute of limitations is appropriate. If it's a constitutional right, I'm not sure how you can put a... I just want to bring that to your attention. I don't profess to know for sure. In my opinion, it's an equitable remedy, but I just wanted to throw that out there, you know, in legal theory land, something to think about. So, otherwise, like I said, Oregonians in Action, at least the concepts here, certainly supports these and urges your favorable consideration. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions for the two gentlemen? Senator Wissess.
For Mr. Stacy, does Thousand Friends of Oregon oppose including claims whose claimants were misinformed by the counties that they only needed to file with the county and not the state for a Measure 49 claim? These are nearly 1,000 citizens who apparently have lost their right under Measure 49 due to misadvice by counties who mistakenly adhere to the belief that land use planning is driven by the counties.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, if we were to advise the committee on how to vote on that issue ultimately today, yes, we would oppose granting blanket authorization to consider those claims in every case. I concur with what Mr. Day has said, that there can be cases of complete good faith action by both county officials and claimants that could merit relief, and I believe there are cases to the contrary. The more I talk about those, the more opportunity for rancor will emerge. But I also want to reiterate what I believe I heard the chair say, that in cases where a county government knowingly disregards the legal advice provided since December of 2004 by the state's highest judicial or legal advisor, the Attorney General, on the proper implementation of a measure, and consistently takes a different route at variance with the vast majority of county governments, then that county does open itself up to its own legal liability to those citizens that it, as it turns out, misled.
And how does that, I understand your discussion, but how does that provide relief to the citizens of the counties, and all of us represent the citizens of the counties? How does that, how does your stand there provide relief to the folks, whether they were misadvised by the state, whether they were misadvised by the county, whether they were misadvised by an attorney? How does that, how is there fairness in that stance to eliminate their right to a Measure 49 claim?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Whitsitt, in my experience, both in private practice and in government administration, I've encountered cases in which departments of government, in rendering land use advice to applicants, encountered legal liability to those applicants for their erroneous advice. The result was not the issuance of a permit in violation of law, but rather the payment of money damages to that applicant. And I think that would be the remedy that, that could be possible given the circumstances in these cases.
Just one other comment. Most of these counties are bankrupt, Mr. Stacy, so they're not going to be, there's not going to be any significant payment no matter what the court finds, particularly Josephine County. And I can't speak to Washington and Columbia County, but Josephine and Jackson County granted waivers because they didn't have the money to pay in the first place, and they certainly don't have now. So I'll just leave it at that.
Thank you. Senator Dinkelberg.
Thank you, Chair Solomon. I mean, Chair Przanski. I have a question and a comment regarding the counties. I didn't recall if you had discussed this in your comments, but I'm assuming that there was clear direction given to the counties about the process. Was that discussed at all? And I am, having worked in Washington County, I was actually somewhat surprised to hear that they were one of the counties involved.
Chair Brzezinski, Senator Dingfelder, there was clear direction given to the counties of the state's position early on that it was necessary to file with both the state and the county. Mr. Day is correct that there are some circumstances, however, out there where it really was only a county land use regulation that was preventing somebody from carrying out a particular use. But in a vast majority, 90, well above 95% of the Measure 37 situations, we believe it was necessary to file with the state as well as the county. So the Department of Justice issued a letter of advice to the Department of Land Conservation and Development to that effect early on in Measure 37 implementation. I believe, and Mr. Day can correct me if this is not correct, Oregonians in Action on their website during Measure 37 also advised claimants that generally they needed to file with the state as well as with counties. So I think there was a pretty consistent message out there to counties that claimants needed to file in both places to be secure.
And just a comment, thank you, Director Whitman, just a comment to this panel and also to the chair. I really appreciate your hard work in all of this for somebody who's been working two areas, both water and land use, which are probably two most contentious areas. I'm not an attorney, but I do work on policy issues in that field, and so this is somewhat of a rare occasion. I wish it was more frequent in this building, but I do appreciate the hard work of especially Oregonians in Action and Thousand Friends, and with the direction of Director Whitman and the chair, to see that we're ensuring fairness for all Oregonians at the same time balancing concerns about protection for valuable resources throughout the state. So appreciate your hard work.
All right, well, thank you. I need to put a couple of things on the record. And Senator Wissett, the one part that I did have a concern about of trying to figure out those claimants that only filed with the county, knowing the resources that it would take, would also then, under the current funding and structure that LCDC had, we would have to basically stop some of the processing of existing claims that we know are valid that are moving forward through the system. And in consultation with Chair Nolan, who is the counterpart, I guess, to our committee, the Land Use Committee for the House, she actually felt that it was important and imperative for her to be able to act on that to have more definite information. So the choice was, do we put everyone on hold that's currently in the process to redirect the resources, or do we try to expedite what we have before us and at the same time build in an opportunity to get that information? So the intent from Chair Nolan and I would say the Senate side is that it will be reviewed at the February session, as to by then we'll have all this information, and what determinations will be made based on having hopefully a little more clarity as to what occurred. And as Mr. Day, as Ross said, that was discussed between the two parties that there could be just claims that were just filed with the county explicitly trying to deal with a county ordinance or regulation. So with that, I'm going to thank you all again. And Ross, thank you very much for standing in and sitting in with Dave. And we will take the rest of the public testimony that we have scheduled for today. I have only one couple that's currently scheduled to give testimony this time. That's John and Linda Hyde. So if y'all would like to come forward. And the others that are here, is there anyone else who wanted to give testimony?
Okay. Good morning. Yes, thank you for your time. My name's John Hyde, and my wife Linda. We live in Beaverton. We're in Senator Bonamici's district. We're here today just to ask for a tiny change to Senate Bill 949. I've listened to a lot of problems, as we all know, with ballot measure 49, and this is just one little tiny point, and that is the extension of the 90-day limit. As you know, I've heard, I think today, from Director Whitman, that there are, 51 people that were filed within a couple of days late. Out of 124 folks that filed late, I think 51 filed within a couple of days and 70 within 1 week. And the current language in Senate Bill 949 would extend out to 1 week and therefore would cover up to 70 folks, which is about 56% of those that filed late. If you were to extend it to 120 days, you would create the vast majority of the people that file late. I don't know the exact numbers, and I don't think Director Whitman knew them today when I asked him in last week. So that's our request. We do have a ballot measure 37 claim and 49 application then for a farmland in Washington County to build one house on farmland that's been in the family for 100 years. So that we, as you know, we started this process several years ago in 2006 for 37. It took 2 years to get to 2000 almost 2 years to get to the process to get through to the 49, and now it's a year through the process of 49 claim, and Director Rickman is mentioning it'll take another year to complete all of this. So during all of this long extension of time, I guess we would point out that we were 17 days late. And in looking in the fairness of the whole issue, it would seem appropriate to us to forgive that 17-day mistake. Now, there are a couple different categories, I think, of folks that filed late. Again, those that probably thought it was 3 months instead of 90 days. Some might have thought it was 90 days after they received the form, and I think the 1 week does cover all of those, what I also heard called today the more innocent mistakes. Ours is a little less innocent, you might call it. We were simply distracted with other personal issues and made a mistake and filed 17 days late. But looking at the overall process of how long it's taken the state to go through this and the many obstacles that it's put together, and the fact that we're already approved by the state and the county for a Measure 37 claim, it would seem appropriate to us for the state to extend the deadline another 30 days, and that's our request.
Thank you. Ms. Hyde, did you want to also speak?
You want to add anything?
We feel dumb for having made this mistake. Yes.
Now, I just need you to put your name on the record.
Oh, Linda Hyde.
Okay.
Linda Lee Hyde.
Okay. All right. Any questions?
First of all, I want to say welcome. Did you have any experience? You heard the testimony about the counties where there were problems. Did you talk to Washington County about your claim? And I know you're not in that category, but I wondered if
we're there.
And they did emphasize that you had to file with both the state and the county. That they were clear on that to us, anyway.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we provided a written form on that just for your record. Okay.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thanks.
Let's see, Linda, I think you raised your hand. There's another Linda behind you, sorry. I wanted to give testimony to the League of Cities. And Ms. Hyde, yeah, thank you all very much.
Thanks, guys.
And Art, looks like you're working your way up.
You know me.
Go right ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Linda Ludwig from League of Oregon Cities. I wanted to maybe ask a couple of questions and put into the record a couple of concerns for the portion that you're considering of...
I tell you what, before you do that, Mr. Whitman, could I get you to come up to the panel? Because it sounds like there's some questions that are going to be asked, and it might be best to see if we can't get answers that we may not have today so we can perfect the record.
Thank you.
If you can respond to today.
For the portion of Senate Bill 947 that deals with those approximately five claimants that were inside city limits outside UGB, three of which are apparently for the city of Damascus, and I'm largely asking questions on their behalf since they're not here today. My information is that there were three Measure 37 claims inside the city limits of Damascus, outside the UGB. Two of those subsequently filed vested rights applications within the city that were heard by council. One was approved and one was denied. The one that was denied is currently under consideration by the court with a writ of review action from Oregonians in Action. And they're waiting a decision. I guess my questions and concerns, and would love to have some response for the city of Damascus, since they haven't been contacted in terms of information about these claims. The question and weighing and balancing the decision on bringing these claimants into the bill, which would allow sort of a second opportunity when one is being litigated, one has been approved. I just would love to know what the decision-making factors were, what the information that was considered, since the city wasn't contacted for that information.
Chair Brzezinski,
if you'd like to, if you're prepared, you can respond. If not, then you can get the information back to us.
Chair Brzezinski, I can get the information back to you. I'll say generally that there has not been any conversation with City of Damascus about this section. There hasn't been any conversation with any jurisdiction about this section. This is among the parties involved in these discussions. This is simply reflecting the fact that under Measure 49 as drafted, property owners whose property falls in this category of being within a city but outside of an urban growth boundary simply weren't included, and the sense that that was not really the intent to exclude per se that group of people. So there hasn't been any looking at individual circumstances and if somebody's vested or not and has rights under 37 in that manner. It's simply a reflection of the fact that this was a glitch in 49 that wasn't really intended.
Thank you.
Thank you for that explanation. Appreciate that very much. Just kind of a follow-up question to Mr. Whitman, then. How is it that we, or you, or someone have identified that approximately five claimants would be affected by this section?
Chair Brzezinski, that question I can't answer off the top of my head. This is information that came from my staff based on the department's records. But beyond that, I can't answer specifically. I can certainly go back and find out.
All right.
That's been very, very helpful.
All right, thank you. Art.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Art Slock. I'm with the Association of Oregon Counties. And just want to put on the record that we applaud the work that is currently being done to address this issue and also to, shall we say, reaffirm a commitment to expeditiously process the Measure 49 claims. That is one of the, I would say, the highest priority in terms of the Association of Oregon Counties, is to see that the Measure 49 claims that have been filed are processed in an expeditious manner at this point. With regard to information that may be needed to be collected, certainly our association would be willing to help in that effort, especially dealing with the counties that at this point where we have identified the four or maybe others at this point that had advised citizens that they only needed to file at the state level or at the county level, not at the state. But if we can help in terms of additional information and those kinds of things, we're more than happy to do that, and we'll continue to monitor the progress of this piece of legislation. So thank you.
Thank you. Questions, comments? Thank you very much for coming forward. Is there anyone else who wanted to give testimony today on this group of Senate bills, 945 through 950? Not seeing anyone. What I'm going to do at this point, I will be closing the public hearing.
Chair. I need to declare a conflict, potential conflict of interest. I have a Measure 49 claim, my wife and I do, and my wife's mother has a 49 claim.
Okay.
So I need to do that. I also would like to comment that these 1,400 claims are roughly that we're talking about. If you assume there's going to be 2 to 3 houses built on those, $200,000 a piece, that's an $800 million economic stimulus that would go into the communities all around Oregon. as a result of getting these claims freed up. And when we're talking about the entire corpus of 4,400 claims, you're looking at almost $8 billion of potential economic development and in building homes and all that sort of thing. That's just straight out the cost of the building the homes, not the trickle down. So I think it's in this situation, the quicker that these claims can be processed and moved forward, and the more claims that can be included, the more legitimate claims that be included, the better it's going to be for the state economy. And really, $8 to $10 billion of economic infusion right now would be very beneficial, I believe.
Yeah.
And the other thing I wanted to ask about, or at least comment on, those county only claims, those people have who filed only with the county. If in fact we don't move forward on any of those until next February, then it would appear that the number 9 in this on the vested thing that would lower that window down to 2 years would then only give those people a year or less to determine their vested claims after they were put back in the queue. I think that's something we ought to look at as well. You understand what I'm saying?
I think I'm tracking on that, but it would seem to me that if you're talking about the, and Mr. Whitman can correct me on this, but my understanding is the reason for setting that vested right is for action, and if they are going to be looking for some type of relief from the county or state or a combination thereof, they would just need to be filing their suit, their lawsuit, if that's what they need to do for litigation within that period.
The point being that there would be little reason for them and have no standing for them to file a suit unless they actually, in fact, had a Major 49 claim. And they won't even have an opportunity to be determined to have a 49 claim or, you know, under this plan until at least after February of next year. And the clock is ticking. You know what I'm getting at. We might want to look at that. That we may be, if we actually instituted a 2-year limit, that we might be eliminating some of those claims from the ability to even ask for that determination.
Do you want to try to get a response on that? Because I'm not sure exactly how the time frame would actually work.
I'm not either. That's why I asked.
Mr. Whitman, could you come forward, please? If you're able to respond, I don't know if you heard the question.
Chair Brzezinski, Senator Whitsitt, this is frankly a detail that the parties are in legislative council are still talking about. Right now the language is 2 years from the effective date of this legislation. Frankly, what's important to the department here isn't when the limitations period starts so much or even what the limitations period is. It's simply having some form of limitation. And the reason is a practical one. What we don't want to see is property owners 10 years from now or 20 years from now trying to come in and prove and find evidence in a very difficult situation for whether or not they had done enough work to have a vested right 20 years ago. So I hear your concern about the 2-year limitation from the effective date of the bill perhaps not matching up with people when people will know what relief they're getting under 49. I think we can work on that and perhaps adjust when that limitations period runs from, or conversely, we could give more time from the effective date of the bill. But I think one way or another, I don't think we're wedded to any particular detail there. It's more the concept of having some limitation period.
It seemed to me that it would be fairer to start the 2-year tolling when you actually had a 49 claim that has been at some point accepted. Even the application accepted in good faith, or whether, and I think we're on the same page there. Thank you. I appreciate your answer.
If I could, just one clarification on that, Chair Brzezinski, Senator Whitsitt. some claimants are only proceeding under a vested right pathway. They have not filed for relief, either 1-3 or 4-10 home sites under 49 at all. So they may not be receiving any sort of determination from the state. So we probably do, from as a technical sense, want that limitation period to run from the effective date of the legislation. We may just want to give more time so that we assure for people who are also seeking relief under Measure 49 for a number of home sites that they have enough time to react once they get a final determination.
All right. Thank you very much. With that, what I'm going to do is I'm closing the public hearing on Senate Bill 945, 946, 947, 948, 949, and 950. Now, what I am also going to do is we had this scheduled for a possible additional public hearing and work session on Tuesday of next week, which is the 24th. We will not be having any additional public hearings since we've had this posted and everyone that wanted to give public testimony has had that opportunity. I'm also don't believe we're going to be being able to do anything on this bill in the way of a work session because, one, we're waiting for the amendments. Two, once we get the amendments, they have to go through the process of getting a fiscal and a revenue statement. And so with that, what I'm going to go ahead and do is take the notice that we currently have for a public hearing and work session on these six bills and take them off so no one is coming here without having any reason to be here from the public. But we as a committee will continue to meet. There's one bill that we carried over yesterday, which was
274,
and so that's the only thing that we'll have on the agenda for Tuesday the 24th. And the other thing I want to put on the record, for those who are here, as well as those who may be monitoring by video, Senator Boquist is not here today, as most people can see. He had military duty that took him out of state, and I just want to put on the record that he would have been here if he did not have those obligations. But because those obligations required him to travel out of state to be with his unit, he needed to be excused today, and he is excused. With that, we're going to adjourn for today. And, colleagues, I think we're on the floor at 9:00.
We are.